Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective. Today's topic area is part of our Clinician Series podcast. In our regular podcast, we provide the coverage of a mental health topic of interest, and we find ourselves typically focused on the why behind or the why that drives the work being done in a specific area. The Clinician Series, however, is taking the discussion of topic areas a few steps further, specifically talking with experts not just about the why of their area of expertise, but we'll dive into a more practical, more hands-on, experiential understanding of the what and the how regarding the application of various therapeutic techniques, strategies, and constructs that we'll be presenting. The goal of the Clinician Series is to take our listeners behind the therapy door, to provide a look at and develop an appreciation for what actually occurs in the therapy session, including what gets said, patients' reactions, and the dynamic between the therapist-patient that can occur during the therapy hour.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today we will be concluding our conversation on vicarious trauma with our guests, Dr. Jana Martin and Dr. Lydia Mitchell. In our last episode, we were able to get a foundation of what vicarious trauma is and some of the ways we see its effect. We'll resume our conversation today as we discuss solutions for self-care. Lydia, I know in your work, the mental health professionals and folks that you work with, you're encouraging them and you're, you know, teaching them ways to develop and maintain a sustainable practice and kind of a healthy place that they can work from. What are some of the steps that a practitioner can take that you're teaching for their own self-care to maybe even preemptively address some of the risks of the vicarious trauma that's possible to be experienced?
I think, you know, especially for clinicians or therapists of color or who come from migrant backgrounds, I think it's important in building your plan to also not look at how do my clients' experiences of discrimination and of having less resource impact them and how do I adopt some of that thinking, but to even look at our own internalized racism and do I have ideas about how far I can go? And have I accepted that some of the kind of the dominant culture's way of looking at me, do I think that's true? And in what ways does that show up in my work? So I think it first always starts from like a place of inquiry. But I think for clinicians in general, I like to think about that by the time we're thirsty, we're already dehydrated. So having a plan and anticipating when you can expect that something's really going to deplete you. And so if it's a particular client that's going to come in or a world event, I was very nervous about politics and things. So I had a plan of like when there's going to be a specific day that's going to be harder, what will I do? And sort of the same ideas that we talk about with our clients of like, what will your coping plan be? I would encourage clinicians to create a coping plan, to sit down and look at the hours of their schedule and how many hours do you spend in service of others? How many hours do you spend for yourself? How many hours are you with family? And use something as a guidepost of like if it's the hours, if it's the days, to look at where you're spending your time and where are you putting your focus.
Yeah, that's really good. These are things that we can prepare for and set a framework in anticipation of these things just being a natural part of the therapy. And so we can do that preemptively. And I think in a way that can be very, very beneficial to us. Jana, I'm not sure if you had a thought on that, but I also want, Jana, I want to ask you a little bit about, there are also some things we can do in the moments when we're in the therapy session that can be really helpful to us as clinicians. So you want to comment on Lydia and maybe kind of segue into that? I'd really appreciate that part too.
One of the things that I would do that I thought was an important part of my self-care, because I dealt with clients with many different disorders and some of them were very difficult in terms of emotionally. And one of the things I would do every afternoon before I would leave the office is I would look at my schedule for the next day. This relates to your thought about a plan. And I would look at who I was seeing. And I would go to each name on my schedule and I would say, what do I need when I am with this client?
Yeah, that's good.
What do I need when I am with this client? And it helped to focus me, but it also helped me to think, okay, You know, I know that some clients pull different strings for me, and I want to be prepared and, as a nice segue, figure out which one of the strategies I might want to use. So self-awareness is huge, whether we're talking about self-care or we're talking about what you can do in the session. I alluded to this a little bit earlier about being very aware of what's going on with you while you are listening to your client and or patient. And so being very aware of your body and to practice it outside of the session so that you can be aware of, okay, what do my clothes feel like on my skin? Can I feel the seam in my shirt on my shoulder? Or how does the back of my blouse feel in terms of how it touches me and when I move? And when you practice these things outside of sessions, then when you find yourself in a self-awareness check when you're with a client and you feel like you're getting pulled in, there are strategies you can use to break the synchronization so that you can have that kind of guidance to help them and you. So then you say, okay, how does my shirt feel on my shoulder right now? Can I feel it? Can I feel my feet and toes inside my shoes? It's a kind of grounding.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to wiggle my toes. What does that feel like? Do I feel any rough edges? I'm still able to hear my patient. Yes. I'm still in tune with my patient, and I would argue that I am better able to help because I am grounding myself. Mm-hmm. So doing that, but also just averting your gaze just ever so slightly for just a second to something in your office that you have identified is a marker for you. Yes. I can feel myself getting very involved emotionally with this description of this trauma. So I'm going to avert my gaze ever so slightly to that rosebud that's in that painting that's right by that client or patient. And I'm going to notice the color. I'm going to change the color of it if I need to help break that synchronization while still being very present with my client or patient. I may shift in my seat. I may sit up straighter. I may change my breathing, get a drink of water, write some notes, blink. And blinking actually helps.
Yeah.
Taking a deep breath, exhaling. There are so many things that we can do in the moment that are not observable to our patients and clients, but that allow us to get that grounding so that we can provide the reflection that we need to provide and that modeling we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, really good.
If I were to add to that, Jen, I would say I've encouraged people before to engage with your environment like a toddler. Toddlers are concerned with colors and textures and smells.
Yes.
It's just, to drop into just the moment. Yeah, I loved your example of the seam of your shirt. And yes, absolutely.
Right. Related to the senses, there's the 5-4-3-2-1 strategy. I'm going to notice 5 things I can see, 4 things I can hear, 3 things I can feel, 2 things. And you just go and you engage all of your senses again to help create the important therapeutic space.
That's right.
That is needed.
Again, that's saying that I'm not disconnecting and losing a moment. In fact, I'm better in that moment to be able to join rather than if I were to get caught up with and not be as aware of it.
Right, right.
I was going to mention, I've tried before too, when sitting across from someone and feeling really engaged by their story, to spend some time intentionally dwelling with our differences and not the ways that we're similar. Mm-hmm. And so I feel a deep sadness, but I am not. And stating like some demographic or some facts about the person's history to remind myself who I am and who they are. And it's a way of kind of shifting your focus to and clarifying, the differences.
Excellent. That's that self-other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's that self-other we were talking about. And I love the, I know my client is very, very overwhelmed right now, but I am not.
Excellent. And I get to hold them in that place in the way that they need to be held, that they can't do for themselves quite yet. Let me join them in that holding place. I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming near the end of our time, but I'd like us to wind down really on a positive note as we talk about trauma work. And yes, it can be costly to the practitioner, but you both have provided some really great ways to both identify and manage some of these risk factors that allow us to be present in that therapeutic relationship in some very, very helpful ways. But in addition to self-management, there's also an opportunity for practitioners to experience personal and professional growth within this type of work, isn't there? And we refer to this very real and very attainable growth opportunity as vicarious resilience or vicarious transformation or compassion satisfaction. Could you each share just your understanding of this positive opportunity in working with trauma and what we have access to if we're aware of the things that you're helping us be more appreciative of and what you may have experienced personally as practitioners yourself?
Certainly. Well, I love the idea of vicarious resilience. Being a longtime student of resilience, it's just wonderful. And I think the work that Hernandez et al. Did to bring this forward in the early 2000s was very important. For me, it means that as a therapist, that I can actually learn my own ways, different ways to overcome adversity from watching how my patients and clients overcome it as well. Because I don't know everything. Right. And because I know some strategies doesn't mean that I know all the strategies. Right. And in order to deal with my own individual difficulties, traumas, and issues, to remember, oh, wow, this is how this person did it. And I do have a short story I will tell you that's related to this, I believe.
Please do.
I was diagnosed with lymphoma many years ago, and I had a young man who was a long-term patient, off and on long-term patient of mine, who was very, very frightened of anything. And he presented initially with a fear of vomiting. He was very concerned about being sick or ill. So I was very concerned about sharing with him that I had been diagnosed with cancer. And I was very concerned about how that would impact him and our relationship and ongoing therapy. And he was very OCD in many ways. Mm-hmm. And after I had told him, now he was very introverted, he told me, well, I happen to have had a really good therapist who taught me to do this when this happens. And he parroted back to me strategies that had worked for him that, of course, I knew had worked for him, but I had not gone to that place. And in the next session, he brought me a videotape of the series Monk, where the main character is OCD and afraid of germs and all of that. And he said, I know we talked about it before. While you're getting chemo, I want you to watch this and know that I am with you.
I love that.
Right there at that time. And he said, if I can make progress and defeat my difficulties, so can you. And he wrote on a little piece of paper his cell phone number. He was 18 years old. And he said, here's my number. If you ever need me, call me. It was a great way for me to see that I had helped him as he helped himself. And he was at the point where then he could remind me of what helps.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful story. What a testament to your work together. What an awesome example of this resilience and transformation that can take place. Lydia, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it, as you were talking, Jenna, Yalom writes a lot about this in The Gift of Therapy, but he talks about how we can't deny that we also gain something through our relationship to others and just as humans. And what an amazing opportunity that we have to witness human stories and can have, you know, a tough impact on us, that it's also a gift. I think for many therapists, after we've had the experience of witnessing lots of stories, knowing to ourselves, to seeing ourselves as a guide, and that we wouldn't have been able to have that understanding of humanity, of resiliency, if we hadn't chosen this field.
Yes.
Right? If we hadn't done this work. Yeah. So I think that, yes, there's a huge benefit to therapists as well as witnesses of human resiliency. Yeah.
So good. So good. We are so fortunate to be in this field. And this is an example of what can come out of our times when we're invited into a very privileged relationship with those that we work with, who invite us in very trusting ways. Hey, before we wind down, I'd love to hear a resource or two from each of you that you might recommend for us to have for those listening to kind of follow up with. What would you suggest to us?
Well, certainly I would refer people to the Trust website. It's www.trustinsuranceallonewordnocaps.com. We have a lot of resources on how to engage yourself. We have this wonderful series as well on systemic racism and healing and how to empower clients as well as ourselves and dealing with illnesses and viruses and other things. So there are lots of very important resources there on how to take care of yourself as well as take care of others.
Really good. That's a tremendous site, that's for sure. Lydia, what you got for us?
Yeah, well, I wanted to mention again, Trauma Stewardship, and also Trauma Stewardship, the book by Laura Vandernew Lipsky with Connie Burke, and the book Real Happiness at Work. There's also Excellence by Sharon Salzberg. It's Meditations for Accomplishment, Achievement, and Peace. I think those would be my two biggest recommendations. I think they're a good starting point.
Really good. Really good. Well, Jenna, Lydia, thank you so very much for being part of the podcast. And what a important topic. I trust our colleagues listening to this and those that are in the field working with trauma to some degree are really going to benefit from our time today. So thank you so much for joining me. And it's been great to be with you.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun. Lydia, it's been great talking with you. And Graham, always a wonderful experience.
Yeah, thank you both. This was really, it's really nice to just hear stories and chat. And thank you.
It is. And for those listening in, we thank you for joining us as well. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Hey, Behavioral Health fans, we want to hear from you. If you have an idea for a show topic that you would like covered in a future episode, go to triedbehavioralhealth.com/behavioral-health-today and click on the Send Us Your Idea button to submit a topic. We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving us a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.